from deep inside your radio.
Yeah, I'm here where we're saving daylight, baby. For your listening pleasure, we're saving it. Ladies and gentlemen, we haven't talked lately. You got a frog in your pocket? We haven't talked lately on this broadcast about genetically modified stuff. But here's a good reason to start again. Be afraid. Be very afraid. An investigation has been launched into how a genetically modified fungus, always a good idea. Let's try that at home, shall we? A genetically modified fungus, I say, escaped containment facilities at Lincoln University in New Zealand. How does a fungus escape? Not with a bedsheet. The Ministry of Primary Industries launched an investigation after the fungus was found outside of the glass houses, throwing stones in... No, he wasn't. And laboratories where it's kept. The ministry, the MPI, says all samples and plant materials known to contain the modified fungus have been secured. All you plants, against the wall. Based on what we know at present, the potential biological risks from this discovery appear very low, says Roger Smith, Deputy Director General of Verification and Services for MPI. No, that wasn't a job I was offered at Career Day in high school either. At this stage, he says, we believe it is unlikely any potentially genetically modified Bovaria bassiana fungus has spread further. Believe it is unlikely. That you can take to the bank. Of course, the bank is J.P. Morgan. MPI says no evidence to suggest the genetic modifications made to the fungus increases the risk to humans or animals. Is there evidence it doesn't? The story doesn't say. Lincoln University informed MPI and the Environmental Protection Authority last week when it discovered evidence to suggest a fungus it was researching was potentially a genetically modified strain. MPI is treating the situation very seriously, said Roger Smith, Deputy Director General of Verification and Services. MPI inspectors visited the campus a couple Fridays ago, immediately put in place controls to prevent further potential breaches. He says, ultra-reassuringly, it's unclear how the breach occurred. So, you know, the genetically modified fungus, what's it going to do? Turn into a magic mushroom? Ladies and gentlemen, a few weeks ago on this broadcast, I expressed some astonishment at the fact that, as uncovered by a report in the British newspaper, The Independent, former British slave owners got paid reparations when Britain ended the slave trade. For the loss of their slaves, they got reparations. As I say, I expressed some degree of astonishment about that here on the radio. On the radio. So, imagine my surprise to discover this through the services of Le Monde and Agence France-Presse. Far from paying reparations to former slaves, France actually received payments from the nation of Haiti from 1825 to 1946 to compensate for the loss of France's colony in Haiti after the slave revolt there created an independent state in 1804. When slaves in France and its colonies were freed in 1848, colonists who owned sugar plantations in Haiti and still claimed property there were paid reparations for the loss of their slaves. And the leak of the week. I think it's appropriate. I think the accelerating pace of modern life makes this next feature almost mandatory. On Monday of this week, a pressure drop, was detected along one of Chevron's pipelines, which carries diesel and jet fuel between Salt Lake City's refinery and Boise, Idaho. Chevron had to close the valves and stop all flow through the pipeline. It's estimated a total between 100 and 150 barrels, that's around average 5,000 gallons, leaked into the wetlands around the Salt Lake, the Great Salt Lake, just weeks before millions of birds are expected to arrive in the area on their journey to nesting sites further north. This according to oilprice.com. John Whitehead, the assistant director of the Utah Division of Water Quality, says one of the concerns we have is 3 weeks to clean up before the northern migration. More important, he says, than risk of fire are the toxic effects on the ecosystem. The diesel is floating right now. That allows the cleanup to happen more easily. Well, spread some dispersant on it. That'll cure that. Returning to John Whitehead's comment, but we will be looking at longer-term impacts to the wetland area if it flows through. Our Leak of the Week plaque, a virtual plaque, of course, goes to our friends at Chevron. Hello, welcome to the show. From Santa Monica, California, the edge of America, the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer. Welcome you to this edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen.
High def, low def, no def, take my hand. It's a digital wonderland.
News of the digital wonderland. For you.
Got to be so careful where you stand. In the digital wonderland.
This is based on a report by the Pew Research Center into the state of the media, specifically radio. Radio. Yes, radio. It says NPR may have positioned itself for the digital age better than other news radio, at least in terms of finding its audience. NPR's radio listenership declined somewhat last year. Did you know that? Hello? You still there? But new audience to the network's mobile apps seems to be making up for that loss, if not more than making up for it. But while new digital options grew in their audience share, AM and FM's beleaguered attempt to draw people back to radio through HD did worse than ever. For the first time since 2004, when HD radio receivers became available for retail sale, more radio stations in America have dropped their HD signal, then adopted the technology. By December of last year, 2,048 stations were broadcasting an HD signal, down from 2,103 in 2011, according to analysis from the Project for Excellence in Journalism. What does that have to do with radio? HD failed to both entice AM/FM listeners to pay up rather than continue listening for free.
Why would they refuse to do that?
Please give. And to draw those willing to pay away from satellite radio. Signs do not look promising on the consumer side. Since 2008, the price of an HD of a receiver capable of receiving so-called HD radio, so-called because it has nothing to do with high definition. It's just a term. It's like an HD toothbrush or an HD sponge. Anyway, the price of a receiver able to receive these signals has dropped from nearly $100 to about $50. In response, the developer of HD radio, Ibiquity, began pushing car manufacturers to include factory-installed HD receivers in their newer models. So far, nearly 30 car models carry this feature. That would sound impressive until you realize that trails the number of models that come equipped with Pandora. All right, then. So here's a word to the wise to all those affiliated stations of this broadcast who put me on their HD stream. Help! Help, please. And now, ladies and gentlemen. News of the Atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet.
Just waiting for the drummer.
Safe, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, safe, too safe to meet. Safe, safe, too safe to meet.
Addy, the Atom.
Yes, sir.
Enjoying the sunshine?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Got it. My proton is a little tanned.
You sound... Wow, I've never heard you sound vain. The operator of the crippled Fuk Daiichi nuclear plant, you probably know this by now, said this week it had found what it believed was the cause of an extended blackout that disabled vital cooling systems, the charred body of a rat.
Rats happen.
The operator, TEPCO, said when its engineers looked inside a faulty switchboard, they found burn marks and the rodent's scorched body. They're good eating, by the way. The company said it appeared that the rat had somehow short-circuited the switchboard, possibly by gnawing on cables. Cables are good eating for rats. So here's what you don't know, perhaps, yet, regarding that story. TEPCO is facing sharp criticism for both its delay in resolving that loss of cooling functions and for the lax practices, that led to the scare. The blackout cut power to cooling equipment at several fuel storage pools and had the potential to become catastrophic, reports Asahi Shimbun. With the cooling function shut down, the temperature of the fuel rods in the pools could have risen enough to evaporate the cooling water, perhaps leading to a meltdown of the fuel. This clearly shows that the plant has not yet been stabilized, says Shiro Izawa, mayor of one of the municipalities where the plant's located. It's so big it's in more than one municipality. How about that?
You need more than one municipality to contain us.
All right. Learn to pronounce it. TEPCO officials apparently were not seriously concerned by the possibility of a meltdown of fuel rods in the pools. That's reassuring, of course. Though the company has taken measures to provide several backup electricity sources for the cooling of the reactors at Fuk, it has not implemented such measures, backups, for the cooling equipment used in the storage pools. Utility officials apparently believe the rise in water temperatures and the effect of a temporary blackout would be slower than that for reactors, meaning they'll have more reaction time available. But at a news conference last week, Shunichi Tanaka, chairman of the Nuclear Regulation Authority in Japan, said TEPCO needs to take measures to ensure backup power sources for the cooling equipment in the fuel rod pools. At the same time, Tanaka indicated there's a possibility of similar blackouts occurring in the future because the high radiation levels at the plant made it difficult to conduct reinforcement work. It's kind of ironic, isn't it?
I don't see it.
You know, it's the guys who are trying to work to fix the plant can't. It's slow because of the high radiation.
I don't see it.
And, in case you're not reassured enough about the state of that plant, this from the New York Times. Fukushima Daiichi still runs on makeshift equipment, says a TEPCO spokesman. I guess he's bragging. Masayuki Ono told reporters Fukushima Daiichi still runs on makeshift equipment and we're trying to switch to something more permanent and dependable.
Makeshift is good.
It is good. When you're dealing with morgues, contractors were tipped off about surprise inspections of decontamination work around that plant. Tipped off about surprise inspections.
kind of ruins the surprise?
Yes, it does. Giving them time to order workers to lie about hazard pay they weren't receiving, according to the Asahi Shimbun. This is a trustworthy company. I believe in them. One company official warned the failure to mislead the inspectors could cause every worker to lose in the pocketbook. The Ministry of Health, Labor, and Welfare inspected about 110 companies and confirmed that 11 withheld hazard pay from their workers. This came after the Asahi Shimbun reported last November the contractors in the cleanup work were apparently pocketed the taxpayer-funded daily hazard allowance, $106 a day.
Got to make money.
You got to make money. The number of confirmed non-payment cases could increase, says Asahi. The Labor Ministry plans to question contractors and other parties connected to the suspected cover-ups, which may constitute a violation of the labor standards law or coercion as defined in the penal code.
Hazard pay is overrated.
Hazard pay, schmazard pay, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and rat schmat, too.
Okay. That covers the waterfront. The cost of cleaning up Canada's nuclear program has risen dramatically in recent years. Ottawa is being warned another $2.4 billion, Canadian dollars, they're worth more than ours, is needed, bringing the total to $6 billion. Atomic Energy of Canada posted a statement this week saying liability costs will go up by $2.5 billion. The estimate represents the cost associated with decommissioning, managing, and disposing of its radioactive waste in a manner that will ensure long-term health, safety, security, and environmental responsibility. I think $2.4 billion might be a low-ball estimate.
Do you know?
I do not know. The main reason for the liability adjustment is an increase in the indirect cost attributed to the decommissioning and waste management over the period of up to 70 years of the program, says Atomic Energy of Canada Limited. The unexpected cost increases are expected to be passed directly to, any guesses? Yes, the Canadian taxpayer, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. Thank you, Canada, for stepping up and may contribute to the major budget deficit in Ottawa. It always gets passed on to the taxpayers, don't you think?
Well, who else is there?
Yeah, that's right. Who else is there? Thursday marked the one-year anniversary that Vermont Yankee's initial 40-year operating license expired. The aging nuclear plant finds itself on rough financial footing. Energy Corporation last November, that owns Vermont Yankee, informed investors that in March of 2012, the company estimated the fair value of the plant had dropped to $162 million, three times less than the value on its books at the time of $517 million.
Things go up, things go down.
The fair value is based on the price that Energy would expect to receive in a hypothetical sale of the Vermont Yankee plant. Of course, it doesn't have its operating license. $162 million would be a lot to pay for a plant that can't operate, wouldn't you think?
Scrap. Scrap is worth something. Copper. Probably copper in there.
There probably is. The cash flow projections depend on pending legal and state regulatory matters, as well as projections of future revenues and expenses. This is after the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has asked Energy for additional information on finances of the plant. The NRC spokesman said the financial qualifications place a precedent, thinking needs priority on safety. We want to make sure the owners of nuclear power plants have the financial withdrawal to properly and safely operate a plant as well as decommission it when the time comes. Does Vermont Yankee have it? We don't know that at this point, says the spokesman for the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. The NRC is not sure how long it took Energy to officially notify it of the plant's, or investors of the plant's, new value. Energy wouldn't comment on the matter other than to say, buy Energy stock. U.S. nuclear power plants must upgrade ventilation systems of 31 reactors with designs similar to those that melted 2 years ago at Fuk under an NRC order that stopped short of requiring filtered vents, as some safety advocates and the NRC's own staff had urged. The filters are required in Japan and much of Europe, but U.S. utilities say they're unnecessary and expensive. You're just looking.
Well, unnecessary and expensive are two good reasons not to do something that might be necessary.
That's right. The order issued Tuesday requires U.S. operators to upgrade vents and ensure they remain operable even during severe accidents, which will never happen. Why are we even thinking? The raging controversy over the fate of the fourth nuclear power plant in New Taipei City's Gongliao District, did you know about this? No. Has sparked public concerns over nuclear waste disposal. Really? But Taiwan Power Company said this week it would do its best to deal with the final management of nuclear waste.
It's good enough for me.
It's best. How can it do better than their best? Dateline Shippingport, Pennsylvania. The Beaver Valley Nuclear Power Station is under increased security due to a security breach, said NRC officials. They offered declined to offer details about the security incident.
So we can only speculate.
Or refuse to. A respected nuclear watchdog group this week said operators at the Perry nuclear power plant near Cleveland discovered a vulnerability in the plant's security last year that could have put the public in danger.
Could, should, would.
The weakness apparently had to do with underground piping or trenching through which intruders might be able to get inside the plant, said the Union of Concerned Scientists. They did not identify the location of the pipes or tunnels at the plant.
They're rabble rousers.
Yes, they are. They rouse this particular rabble. A key contractor involved in the troubled cleanup at the former Hanford, Washington nuclear weapons complex admitted this week it had engaged, sorry, it had, admitted earlier this month, it had engaged in criminal time card fraud. Not, you know, stealing the hazard pay, but criminal time card fraud, and agreed to pay $18.5 million to settle the charges. The project, which requires construction of a $13.4 billion treatment plant to process highly radioactive bomb waste, is years behind schedule and is paralyzed by technical issues that have halted the work. The time card fraud was carried out by the Colorado-based environmental firm CH2M Hill, which billed the government for employee overtime that was not performed, a scheme that did involve the company's upper management, direct supervisors, and hourly workers, according to the Justice Department. It had recruited workers for overtime, offering 8-hour blocks of extra pay, but then allowed employees to leave the job early. CH2M Hill agreed to refund $2 million in profit it earned from the government under the scheme, as well as pay $16.5 million to resolve civil liabilities. The amount of the civil damages suggests potentially thousands of employees were involved. The Justice Department called the practice systemic and widespread. So why no criminal? It's the Justice Department. What are you kidding? It's a company. What are you kidding? Upper management knew about the conspiracy, but elected not to stop it or discipline the employees, said the Justice Department. Oh, here we go. Eight individuals have pleaded guilty in the time card fraud. Probably lower-level employees, it doesn't say. The company itself had not been implicated until this week. The company declined to say whether it had removed or disciplined any members of management. So apparently no members of management were charged with a crime. Because it's the Justice Department. Clean, safe, too cheap to meter. Our friend, the Atom. Addy, go get some sun.
That is my plan.
All right then, ladies and gentlemen. News of the... What news are we going to do now? Anybody got an idea? Something's sitting waiting to happen, I do believe. Yeah. Let us, right now, go to a copyrighted feature of this broadcast, the Apologies of the Week. You know, so many choices.
We're so sorry.
So many choices, so little intelligence. Dateline Manila, the president of Black Elk Energy, owner of the ill-fated oil platform in the Gulf of Mexico, I didn't know about this, has apologized for insinuating that the accident in November last year was the result of the incompetence of Filipino offshore oil workers. The Philippine embassy in Washington said that Black Elk president John Hoffman apologized for the statement, which the embassy had protested. What happened last November, a deadly rig explosion killed one worker and left another missing. Former Yankee manager and player Lou Piniella, now a broadcaster with the YES Network, He turned down a bid from the No Network, apparently. Apologized for using the word raped when talking about a trade between the Blue Jays and the Marlins, two baseball teams. Pinella, working with Ken Singleton during the Yankees-Red Sox exhibition game on Yes, got into discussion about the Marlins sending players to Toronto and getting relatively nothing in return.
I don't want to use the word raped, but they basically took a lot of talent from the Miami Marlins, said Pinella. He later apologized.
South Africa's Archbishop of Durban, Wilfred Knox Napier, apologized this week for offending victims of child abuse after he described pedophilia as a mental illness and not a crime during a recent BBC interview. Quote, I apologize sincerely and unreservedly to all who were offended by the botched interview and especially to those who have been abused and need every help and support that the church can give, Napier said in a statement released this week. Child sexual abuse is a heinous crime, among other things, because of the damage it does to the child. In that concern, I include the abused who has become an abuser. Napier was one of the cardinals to help elect Pope Francis. Acknowledged that the wheels came off during his interview. But can see, cardinals have wheels. But the remarks had been taken out of context, he said. He added he was, quote, afforded no time to explain that the priority of pastoral concern must always be for the victim, unquote. Yeah, a lot of high-ranking church officials haven't had the time to make that point, have they? The damn clock. The Dateline London, the Sun tabloid newspaper, has apologized in high court for accessing private information on a stolen mobile phone belonging to a Labour MP, Member of Parliament. Police told Siobhan McDonough her text messages had been accessed after her phone was stolen in October 2010. The Sun, which has not admitted to the theft of the phone, is to pay the Member of Parliament very substantial damages. And the court has heard possibly hundreds of new claimants seeking damages from the now-defunct News of the World, also published by Nice Corp. Nice people doing nice things. CNN, Fox News, and MSNBC have come under fire for naming the underage victim in the Steubenville, Ohio rape trial. The TV network's broadcast courtroom footage in which one of the high school football players who had been found guilty apologized to the 16-year-old girl and her family. In the clip, the player apologized to and then named the victim, her family, my family, and the community. He addressed the girl by name. It was not censored for the network's airing. CNN and MSNBC broadcast the clip a week ago. Fox did so later in the week. CNN and MSNBC have apologized. No word about whether Fox did. The two young men raped the severely intoxicated fellow student and then swapped pictures and stories of the teen online in the days afterwards. Both have been sentenced to a minimum of 1 year in juvie. Australian Prime Minister Julia Gillard delivered a historic national apology in Parliament this week to the thousands of unwed mothers who were forced by government policies to give up their babies for adoption over several decades. More than 800 people affected by the apology cried and cheered as they listened in the Great Hall of Parliament House. A national apology was recommended a year ago by a Senate committee that investigated the impacts of the now discredited policies. Unwed mothers were pressured, deceived, and threatened into giving up their babies from World War II until the early 1970s so they could be adopted by married couples, which was perceived to be in the children's best interests, the committee found. But Gillard committed $5 million Australian dollars to support services for affected families and to help biological families reunite. Roman Catholic hospitals in Australia apologized 2 years ago for forcing unmarried mothers to give up babies for adoption and urged state governments to accept financial responsibility. Catholic Health Australia, the largest non-governmental hospital in operator in Australia, said the practice of adopting out such children for married couples was, quote, regrettably common from the 1950s through the 1970s. There'll be more news of the godly coming up. But back to the apology. Standard Chartered Bank has been forced by U.S. regulators to retract comments by its chairman in which he dismissed the bank's breaches of U.S. sanctions to Iran as, quote, clerical errors, and insisted the breaching of the rules was not a willful act. Sir John Peace apologized for the remarks made earlier this month at its press conference where it announced its financial results. The bank was forced to issue a formal stock market announcement by U.S. regulators, which had fined Standard Chartered Bank $415 million and reach deferred prosecution agreements. That's right, it's the Justice Department. They don't prosecute banks. With the bank to avoid further sanctions. Written in the form of a signed letter by Peace, the chairman said that during the press conference, quote, I made certain statements that I very much regret and that were, at best, inaccurate. Elegant way of putting it, sir. He said questions were asked concerning individual employee conduct and compensation following its deferred compensation agreements. And he lied. I apologized for the statements I made to the contrary of what I said. Of what the truth is, he says. But still no prosecution, even though deferred prosecution was based partly on him acknowledging that they did a bad thing. Dateline Jerusalem, prodded by President Obama, Israel and Turkey agreed this week to end a three-year rift caused by a deadly Israeli commando raid on a Turkish ship bound for Gaza, a rapprochement urgently sought by the United States to help contain spillover from the worsening fighting in Syria. During an airport meeting with Obama at the end of his two-day visit to Israel, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu phoned Turkish Prime Minister Recep Erdogan. Bowing to a long-standing Turkish demand, Netanyahu apologized for the deaths of nine activists aboard the Turkish ship and promised to reach an agreement on compensation to their families. Another bank screw-up leads to another bank apology. Chase Bank experienced an embarrassing glitch this week when online customers were either unable to access their accounts or, more troubling, saw their balances listed as zero. The problems presented themselves on Monday to users logging into Chase's online banking service via computers and mobile devices. 3 hours after the initial alert, Chase tweeted the problem had been solved, saying, Chase, we're back to business as usual. That is very disturbing. Anyway, they did apologize. We're truly sorry for this inconvenience. And when a bank apologizes, ladies and gentlemen, you can take that to... And Senator John McCain is walking back from calling Senators Rand Paul and Ted Cruz wacko birds in an interview, saying he respects the senators and what they stand for. That was inappropriate, and I apologize to them for saying that, and I respect them both. Senator John McCain, ladies and gentlemen, voiced by an actor. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Sitting here in limbo, but I know it won't be long. Sitting here in limbo, like a bird without a song. But I know that my fate will lead me on.
Live from Limbo, this is Le Show, and ladies and gentlemen, we are at the end of the week commemorating, marking the 10th anniversary of the United States Allied. Hey, how about those allies? The Coalition of the Willing invasion of Iraq. And you probably noticed, as did I, couldn't avoid it, that some of the architects of the whole journey came before the public and maintained it was a damn good idea that worked out okay. Most notably, of course, Dick Cheney. But I think Wolfowitz surfaced, came up for air. Maybe a couple others did, too. I didn't notice. It's, I guess, noteworthy that, as far as I know, I try to keep up, none of them has actually set foot in Iraq to check it out for themselves. That's probably because they're so beloved over there, they'd be overwhelmed with flowers. So they make their triumphalist analyses at a certain remove. So, doing what one can, let's try to remove that remove. First of all, just an interesting, just a cute statistic. Between 2002 and 2005, U.S. Armed Forces expended 6 billion bullets, according to the General Accounting Office. That's 250,000 bullets per insurgent killed in Iraq and Afghanistan. So let's work on AIM. But contamination from depleted uranium munitions and other military-related pollution is suspected of causing a sharp rise in congenital birth defects, cancer cases, and other illnesses throughout much of Iraq. This is according to reporting by Al Jazeera. Many prominent doctors and scientists contend that DU contamination is also connected to the recent emergence of diseases not previously seen in Iraq. New illnesses in the kidney, lungs, and liver, as well as total immune system collapse. DU contamination may also be connected to the steep rise in leukemia, renal, and anemia cases, especially among children being reported throughout many Iraqi provinces. There's also been a dramatic jump in miscarriages and premature births among Iraqi women, particularly in areas where heavy U.S. military operations occurred, such as Fallujah. Official Iraqi government statistics show prior to the outbreak of the first Gulf War, the rate of cancer in Iraq was 40 out of 100,000 people. By 1995, after the first Gulf War, it was 800 out of 100,000. By 2006, 1,000 out of 100,000 people. Current estimates show the increasing trend continuing. The actual rate of cancer, due to the lack of accurate documentation, is likely to be much higher than even these figures suggest, says AJE. Dr. Salah Haddad of the Iraqi Society for Health Administration believes there's a direct correlation between increasing cancer rates and the amount of bombings carried out by U.S. forces in particular areas. My colleagues and I, says, have all noticed an increase in Fallujah of congenital malformation, sterility, and infertility. You're welcome. The rates of birth defects, 14 times higher in Fallujah than they are in Hiroshima. According to that report. But there's also torture going on. Waterboarding and enhanced interrogation techniques like those exposed at Abu Ghraib have continued even after U.S. forces withdrew and handed security responsibility over to the Iraqi government. Torture is routinely used against detainees in the new Iraq, usually in an attempt to force a confession. Female prisoners have also reported being repeatedly raped while in custody. No one thinks America has influence now in Iraq, says the deputy prime minister. America could still do a lot if they wanted to, he says. The United States is dismantling the vestiges of a police training program once envisioned as its signature contribution to post-war Iraq, having come to terms, reports the Washington Post, with the fact that Iraqis had no interest in a multi-billion dollar investment designed to bolster the country's troubled judicial system. No interest. And a story somewhat told, but not really told enough. It's the largest airborne transfer of currency in the history of the world, is what it is. Finding out what happened to all the money involved has become one of the biggest financial mysteries of all time, according to CNBC. Beginning in the very earliest days of the war in Iraq, the New York Federal Reserve shipped billions of dollars in physical cash to Baghdad to pay for running the place. The money was packed onto pallets inside a heavily guarded New York Federal Reserve compound in New Jersey, trucked to Andrews Air Force Base, and flown by military aircraft to Baghdad International. By one account, the New York Fed shipped about $40 billion in cash between 2003 and 2008. We also were, of course, paying off the Sunnis to awaken them during the Sunni awakening. In just the first 2 years, the shipments included more than 281 million individual bills weighing a total of 363 tons. But soon after the money arrived in Baghdad, the paper trail documented who controlled it began to go cold. Just an aircraft packed with dollars.
L. Paul Bremer, arriving in Iraq, had a little problem, tough nut to crack. Had to 86 the army, tell the bureaucrats goodbye. He's running the whole country. How's he gonna get by? An aircraft packed with dollars, bills filling every seat. No need for in-flight movies, not a bite to eat. Moolah riding first class, greenbacks with a free pass. Money on a crazy commute. A jet plane full of loot. Jet plane full of loot. Jet plane full of loot. Dave Petraeus, smart without a doubt, had a little fire they had to put right out. Sunnis getting violent, 'cause the Shias ran the show. What could Dave do for the Sunnis to convince them not to blow? Think flight attendants feeling useless, money doesn't drink. Legal love me tender to buy a brief surrender. Cash to tell the Kurds, please don't shoot. A jet plane full of loot. Jet plane full of loot. Jet plane full of loot. Syria's in turmoil. Iran will not concede. Yanks need a persuader that's behind but still can lead. You can spend him, you can save him, you can send him to Belize. They don't make you love Americans, but they've got a way to please. An aircraft packed with dollars, you know you don't ask why. Extremists still like Cadillacs and a condo in the sky. Seeing money in a seatbelt, got to make your heart melt. Simoleons like to stay, but got to scoot. On a jet plane full of loot. Millions, billions, trillions. There's just no time to compute that jet plane full of loot. Jet plane full of loot. Jet plane full of loot.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm, won't you? Here's my friend Glenn to sing.
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
Well, sing whisper. Swisper. A scientist who works at Hawaii's Mauna Loa Observatory says the amount of heat-trapping carbon dioxide in the air jumped dramatically in 2012, marking it very unlikely that global warming can be limited to another 2 degrees, as many global leaders have hoped. The scientists say the rise in CO2 reflects the world's economy revving up and burning more fossil fuels, especially in China. Carbon dioxide levels jumped by 2.67 parts per million since 2011 to the total just under 395 parts per million, says Peter Tans, who leads that greenhouse gas measurement team for NOAA. That's the second highest rise in carbon emissions since record keeping began in 1959. This, according to the Associated Press, the measurements are taken from an air samples captured on top of Mauna Loa on Hawaii Island. I'll go check that out this week, personally, and get back to you on that. Canada's Arctic archipelago glaciers will melt faster than ever in the next few centuries. Research by European-funded scientists has shown that 20% of the Canadian Arctic glaciers may have disappeared by the end of the century, which would add to an additional sea level rise of 3.5 centimeters. They're just centimeters. What's the problem? You know, if it were inches, get back to me. The results of the research will be published in Geophysical Research Letters. The paper is available online. The researchers developed a climate model for the island group of the north of Canada in which they simulated the shrinking and growing of glaciers in the area. The researchers showed that the model correctly predicted the ice mass loss measured over the last 10 years. Then they used the same model to project the effect of future climate change on Canada's Arctic archipelago glaciers. The most important result of the research is it shows the probable irreversibility of the melting process, according to lead author Dr. John Lennartz of Utrecht University, who says even if we assume global warming is not happening quite so fast, it is still highly unlikely that the ice is going to melt at an alarming rate. The chances of it growing back are very slim, unquote. News of the warm, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now I promised you, and here it is, news of Nice Corp. Nice people doing nice things. British police investigating allegations of phone hacking centered on Rupert Murdoch's newspapers have now charged the deputy editor of his top-selling English tabloid newspaper, The Sun, with making illegal payments to public officials. I believe the host of this show mentioned some time ago that this phone hacking is not the key to this whole story. It's the corruption of public officials. That you can take to... they closed the bank. Jeff Webster is the latest senior figure from News International, the British newspaper arm of Nice Corp, to be accused of criminal offenses in the scandal. Dozens of current and former staff from Murdoch's Sun and News of the World newspapers have been arrested by the cops since early 2011. But, of course, an arrest doesn't mean they're guilty. It just means they've been too nice. Nice people doing nice things. News of Nice Corp. And now, news of the godly. It did occur to me, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, by the way, I don't know if you noticed, but the Anglican Church also inducted a new head this week. You might think only the Catholic Church selected a new leader, but you would be wrong. The Anglican Church selected and installed a new leader this week as well. And what I noticed about it is that the coverage, at least in Britain, of the Anglican Archbishop of Canterbury's installation, the coverage included commentators from other religions, unlike the coverage on both British and American television of the goings-on in Rome, which, to my eye, only involved commentators from the Catholic Church itself, Now the Catholic, now the Vatican, which the Pope runs, is recognized as a nation. It's in the it's got all the diplomatic stuff. So when does the leadership change in a nation only get covered by the guys from inside the organization that elected the guy who's the leader? Anyway, that was just to observe that strange things are going on these days everywhere. The Joliet, Illinois diocese readily admitted that David Rudofsky was sexually abused during his first confession at St. Mary Catholic Church in Mokena, Illinois. It offered him an in-person apology from the bishop and more than six times his annual salary in the hope of putting a quick, quiet end to the incident, reports the Chicago Tribune. Rudofsky wanted more than money. He wanted the diocese to pay for the repeated and oftentimes willful mishandling of sexual abuse cases involving clergy. He demanded that the diocese settle its debt by turning over the secret archives it maintained on abusive priests and making them available for public consumption. The records now public offer the most complete portrait of the ineptitude and indifference, says the Tribune, that greeted the allegations almost since the religious district's inception in 1948. The errors span more than six decades and involve three bishops, 91 places of worship, and more than 100 victims. News of the Godly. Ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Reminiscent of the priest in Milwaukee who molested over 200 deaf boys. What's up with that?
Boom, 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 boom. Wanna do deaf boys.
Boom, boom.
In the next room.
Boom.
Now they're in the closet.
Boom, boom.
Between me and the broom.
Boom, boom.
Half a dozen deaf boys.
Boom, boom.
Nice little crowd.
Boom, boom.
They can be quiet.
Boom, boom.
And I can be loud.
Boom, boom.
24 deaf boys.
Boom, boom.
Take me all day.
Boom, boom.
Barely got the time to.
Boom.
Eat and to pray.
Boom, boom.
Deaf boys can't hear me coming. Deaf boys, don't you dare call its mumming. Might be a chink in my priestly parts, but how can I resist?
How can deaf I resist?
Boys?
Boom, 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 boom.
Half a hundred deaf boys.
Boom, boom.
Who got a head of steam? I could be the coach.
Boom, boom.
They could be the team.
Boom, boom.
88 deaf boys.
Boom, boom.
One for each key.
Boom, boom.
On the piano of my longing.
Boom, boom.
They play a hushed melody.
Boom, boom.
150 deaf boys.
Boom,
oh, this
boom.
Could get tight.
Boom, boom.
A few dozen in the morning.
Boom.
And all the rest at night.
Boom, boom.
Deaf boys can't hear me coming. Deaf boys got my heartstrings a-strumming. Make me make such a joyful noise. Just can't get enough.
Just can't
deaf
get enough.
Deaf boys.
Boom, 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 boom.
Now if I had a deaf boy.
Boom, boom.
For each day of the year. 365.
Boom.
Ho, that would be dear.
Boom, boom.
How many deaf boys
boom, boom.
Have there actually been?
Boom, boom.
Why not ask how many
boom, boom.
Dance on the head of a pin?
Boom, boom.
The world is full of deaf boys.
Boom, boom.
And I'm only one man.
Boom, boom.
All that God expects is.
Boom,
all that you can.
Boom, boom.
Deaf boys can't hear me coming. Deaf boys got me hymning and humming. A shepherd with a closet full of toys. Let's hear it for those deaf
for boys. Boom, 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 boom.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to put the cap on the felt-tip pen that is this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archive whenever you want at harryshearer.com, kcrw.com, available for your smartphone through Stitcher, available as a podcast through kcrw.com, iTunes, and Sideshow Network. And it would be just like making the victims our first priority. If you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Exile in Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. 83,000-plus people follow the host of this program on Twitter, at The Harry Shearer. You could, too. And the email address for this broadcast and the playlist of the music heard here on, available, along with a fabulous store at harryshearer.com, where you can purchase stuff. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.